Fall is upon us, which means Cineplexes have had a few more horror films on offer, along with some retrospective screenings of genre perennials like Halloween and Carrie and Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. For some perspective on the enduring popularity of the horror film and for some recommended home video selections that'll get your heart racing, I'm happy to have on the program today film director, writer, and author Lucky McKee. Good morning, Lucky.
Good morning. Good to see you.
You recently moved to town, or kind of making El Paso your home base. I know you still work around the country, but it's great to have you in the studio for the first time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I know you have a loyal following among horror aficionados, particularly your film May. I often see listed in some of the best horror films of the 2000s. You've made a number of films, and some of them working with your friend Zach Passero, who is an El Pasoan, so another El Paso connection to your work.
Yeah, I wouldn't have moved to El Paso if it wasn't for Zach being such a great friend and spending a lot of time down here and just really enjoying the town.
We've been talking about horror films recently, and the fact that almost since the inception of the cinema, horror tales, stories about the fantastic, the supernatural, seem to have always been a part of the DNA of the cinema.
I think it goes even further back than that to the campfire. Something about the campfire and the cinema are linked to me. The flickering light, sitting in the dark with a group of people and, you know, just enjoying a good story in the safety of a group of people.
Is that part of what draws us to scary films or scary stories, is that it allows us to be scared but also in a safe place? Part of our brain knows that we're still okay.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, we all have our own dark thoughts and our own dark dreams, but to, you know, be able to sit in a movie gives you an opportunity to see what sort of dark visions and dark dreams other people have, and I think that creates a relationship between humans.
I think a lot of cinephiles I know cut their teeth early on horror films, particularly classic horror films. There's something as a child, you know, that we're drawn to being a little scared. And the darkness of the cinema, maybe the darkness of our living rooms at night with just a television light flickering on us, takes us back to that firelight that you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like the first time I ever got to really watch some serious horror movies was my sister's birthday, and I must have been like 6 or 7 years old. And at that time, we didn't have a VCR, so you would go and rent a VCR and get a couple movies. And my sister, our cousin convinced my sister to get nothing but horror movies for her birthday that year. And we stayed up night. We watched like The Hitcher and Carrie and Psycho 3 all in one night in our dark house and like old house in the country. You know, we were in the classic setting to kind of take these things out. And they just blew our minds. It was just
And you were
so
six or
fun.
Seven?
We were afraid to, we were afraid to run down the hall to go to the bathroom. And
you're frozen.
Had to go in groups and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a very, very fond memory.
There is certainly for me, having watched so many horror films over my life and in theaters, something about the theatrical experience in the cinema that the horror film epitomizes so much the power of the cinema itself, in that, you know, you're watching these shadows and light play on a screen. They're two-dimensional. There's sound effects. But the fact that it can force our hearts to move faster, increase
that
our blood pressure.
It has a physical effect on you.
Yes, it's visceral. Yeah.
The best films do.
It's just fascinating. You know, of course, there are love stories that make us cry and other films that work on other parts of our emotions. But there's something so primal about that fight or flight response that it gets triggered by the best horror films.
Yeah, and there's a sick sort of enjoyment that you get out of having the crap scared out of you with a group of people.
I guess there's also something very phantasmagorical about cinema itself, you know, just the medium itself, that we're watching these often ghosts themselves, people that no longer exist.
Yeah, it's very easy to equate, you know, the time travel aspect of filmmaking, you know, which I'm very fascinated with. You know, it's like, especially now seeing all of these movies being remastered in HD, it's not a horror film, but if you go back and look at a Buster Keaton film like The General in high def, completely remastered, completely cleaned up, it's like you're back in that time again. It's like, I don't know, there's something really special about that. So time travel does exist.
Right.
In a certain
it's
way.
It's called cinema.
Yeah, exactly. We should make t-shirts that say that.
These characters are trapped in this loop that they can't get out of.
Yeah, and they live forever. It's amazing.
That's right. A number of of theaters right now are showing new horror films as well as some retrospectives. It's the time of year, October, Halloween. Of course, horror films are good all year round, but it is the time of year that often people think about, I think I'm going to watch a horror film.
Yes.
Even people who don't normally watch horror films.
Yeah, and you often run into people, a lot of people that say, I don't like horror movies, you know, but they always end up watching them at some point or another. I think a lot of people say they don't like horror movies because they don't like being scared and all that kind of stuff. But like, I don't know. I think everybody kind of likes horror movies, whether they want to admit it or not.
Particularly this time of year.
Yeah.
So you've worked up a list of some recommended titles that may be off the beaten path. I know perusing the Cineplex offerings, there's special screenings of The Shining and Halloween and Carrie recently at the Alamo Draft House. And so there are opportunities to see some of the old standbys, you know, the quintessential, essential elements of horror cinema in a theater. But you've picked some films that maybe people are not, haven't thought about or haven't seen or off the beaten path. I wanted to run down a few of those. The first off was Mad Love.
Yeah, this is Peter Lorre's first American film. It's actually a remake of The Hands of Orlak, which was a silent film. I can't remember who was in Hands of Orlak, but it's a very, very interesting story about a mad surgeon. It was one of those films that when I first saw it, I actually watched it like three times that day because I watched it. And then I was in film school at the time and I had to bring my other friend in and say, you have to see this. Yeah. This is amazing. You know,
we should mention it's from 1935.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's another thing that's great about those movies in the 30s is that the films were a lot shorter because they used to run double, triple bills and they'd have newsreels and cartoons and all of this stuff going on in between them. So you actually have these movies that are just like an hour long. And it's like I think that's such a good length for a film narrative, you know, which Black Mirror is kind of bringing back to a certain extent. But Mad Love is just like, it's a great kind of tortured love story about this surgeon that's in love with this woman that's performing in this local show. She's already has a relationship with another man, but that man gets in a train accident and damages his hands. And Peter Lorre is this mad surgeon that replaces this man's hands with the hands of a recently deceased killer.
Right.
it's pretty amazing how.
And the hands have a mind of their own.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And it's a beautiful. The German director Karl Freund, I think, it's his first film as well in America.
It is, and
he was a cinematographer too.
Beautiful cinematographer in Germany, and one of the great German emigres. But he only directed two films. The other being The Mummy.
Yeah.
At Universal, which also looks great as well, and also about a tortured love affair over.
Yeah. And Peter Lorre, I mean, like, if you've never seen a Peter Lorre movie, it's such a good one to start with, you know, and then maybe that'll lead you to something like M, which is a very chilling movie in its own.
Interesting. I think it was MGM that made this film, which was not known for horror films, but they finally got on the bandwagon because Universal was making trainloads of money off of its Universal Monsters in the early 30s. And so MGM dipped their toe in, and it's really a stunning thing. I think of also Paramount around this time made The Island of Lost Souls, another favorite of mine, with Charles Laughton as the Dr. Moreau character from the H.G. Wells novel, vivisecting animals and making them into humans. I mean, you know, and these are in the early 30s, these films.
Right.
I mean, so they're not that graphic. They're, I would say, family friendly in some ways. But the underlying premises are so disturbing that they're creepy.
Yeah, even more disturbing than a lot of the stuff that's coming out now. Mm-hmm. You know, even our like hard R rated, you know, these movies really, really kind of get all the way underneath into some dark places in human nature. And Mad Love is one of those movies that's really fun, like to bust out on a friend because there's no way most people have seen it. Yeah.
Right.
And you're like, you know what? It's only going to take an hour. Give it a chance and it'll stay with you forever.
Other recommended titles?
Of a more recent films, I kind of tried to jump around some different eras. There's a movie that Bill Paxton directed. I think this is the early 2000s. This movie came out called Frailty.
Oh, yeah.
That's a very, very interesting story about a man and his two boys questioning God's existence and you know, how to be of service to God.
Right. And in this case, killing demons.
Yeah. You're wondering the whole movie whether it's true or whether it's not. And it's, you know.
It's about his perception.
Yeah, it's another movie that you know, like back in the video shelf days, you might have seen on the shelf and passed over it, but it's definitely one that you should pick up and take a look at because it goes some really, really dark places.
And Bill Paxton, people will know as a pretty famous actor, but this was, I think, his only directing.
It's the only one I know of. Yeah, he may have directed some television or something like that.
Matthew McConaughey is also in it.
Yes.
Someone Matthew we all Curry. Recognize.
Yeah. And the boys in the film. Yeah, Powers Booth. Yeah, yeah. And the boys in the film are particularly good. But it's a very, very unique horror film from the 2000s that a lot of people looked over.
Scanning your list, I wanted to ask you about The Legend of Hell House from 1973.
Yeah, one to me this is like one of the ultimate haunted house movies along with The Haunting.
The Haunting.
Which is another brilliant film. The Legend of Hell House is a British film. Yeah, about a bunch of people that kind of investigate this notoriously haunted house. I've watched a lot of horror movies, and I really enjoy horror movies, but there's something about this movie and, like, the texture of it, like, really, really gets under my skin, and I keep going back to it over and over again and going back into that lead-lined room. And
yes.
You know, I hate to ruin these things for people, but it's quite a gorgeous film.
And the colors are amazing in that film.
Yeah, the new transfer of it actually is just absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, one thing as a filmmaker, one thing that's really interesting about that film is how quickly they get into the story. I mean, by the time the end credits are done, you're thrust into the story. There's not like a bunch of belabored character setup and everything like that. It's like you're just thrust right into the situation right away. Well, and Roddy McDowall is incredible.
You've hit one of my soft spots, which is the investigators go to a haunted house to investigate or debunk some paranormal activity. And I've always had a fascination with films that contrast the scientific approach with the supernatural, sort of rationalism with the irrational. And this is certainly in that subgenre. A film. You mentioned The Haunting, another great selection from 1963, the Robert Wise film.
Yeah, and that kind of leads back to Robert Wise's first film, which is The Curse of the Cat People, which is a kind of a sequel to the very famous Cat People that preceded it. But this is a wholly different movie and just like a visual delight.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Wise was actually an editor up to that point. He edited Citizen Kane and a bunch of great films. And then Curse of the Cat People gave him an opportunity to replace a director that wasn't working out for the studio, and he came in and just created this like really, really chilling, disturbing story about this little girl that's seeing visions.
Right.
That doesn't really have a whole lot to do with
nothing to do with the
original film. And I had, going through film school, had always been told Cat People was just like such a classic of the genre, and then I was like, yeah, Cat People is pretty cool. I mean, there's gorgeous lighting and it's very chilling and everything. But then I saw Curse of the Cat People, and it kind of fit my taste even better than the original Cat People. It's like a lot of people, whenever anybody talks about Cat People, I'm like, have you seen Curse of the Cat People?
And I would recommend all of the early RKO horror films. I think there were seven that producer Val Lewton made there at RKO, beginning with Cat People and Curse of the Cat
People.
There's
a cool movie kind of loosely based on him called The Bad and the Beautiful by Vincent Minnelli. So it's like if you watch some of those
You'll see Kurt Douglas playing a early producer who's trying to figure out how to make a really cheap horror movie without showing anything. And they're cat men.
or leopard people,
or something. So an homage in the middle of that Minnelli film.
Yeah.
We've been talking mostly about, all about American films. You've got a couple titles on there. I see Inferno. I presume that's the Italian film.
Yes. This is by a director that I have loved for a very long time named Dario Argento, who's most famous for his work producing and writing on Dawn of the Dead would probably be his most popular thing he was involved with, which is a George Romero film that he really helped kind of get made and get out there. And his most famous film is Suspiria, which is a beautiful film that takes place in a ballet academy about witches, and just it has the most amazing score and everything. And Inferno is actually a part of a trilogy that he made. It's the second part of a trilogy. And Inferno, Argento's films are an acquired taste. They're very dreamlike. There's a lot of those kind of moments you have when you're watching a horror film and you're like, why would they do that? You know, his movies operate on a dream logic a little bit more. There's a beautiful underwater sequence directed by Mario Bava, who's pretty much like the most famous Italian horror director. He's kind of the guy that started it all. He started like a whole genre. Argento took that torch in the 70s and really ran with it and went into some spectacular places, but these are very dreamlike, very beautifully lush and beautifully choreographed horror films. Inferno features one of my favorite sequences in cinema, actually, where they're in this apartment and the electricity keeps going out while a record is playing on the Have you seen Inferno? Uh-huh. Have you seen this one? There's this record playing, and it leads up to this amazing scare, with the lights going off and the music going off, and you keep getting plunged into darkness. But again, you know, if you've never seen a Dario Argento film, it's a good place to start. That or Suspiria.
I know you watched a lot when you were 6 or 7. Would you recommend, though, this to families or children?
No, I don't know. Like I said, I wasn't really limited on what I could watch. You know, I was like, I saw Faces of Death before I was 10 years old, you know, an American Werewolf in London and all these crazy.
Yeah, right.
It was a different time.
Right. Latchkey kid with a VCR.
But yeah, I think if you see these Argento films around like 15, 16 years old, they will blow your mind. You've never seen anything like it. I mean, these films, what I love about Argento's films is the way they can be kind of related to fine art through the centuries.
You know, kids do reach an age, at least most of the kids I've known, where they want to be a little scared by movies. And parents all know when that age is. It's different for each kid. A film I saw recently that I thought was really effective and would be good for families is The Woman in Black, partially because Daniel Radcliffe is so good in this film, and it came just off the heels of the last Harry Potter film, where he's making a switch into his adult career, and obviously families will know him from the Harry Potter films. But this is a really fine sort of Victorian age, old dark house, fog and Northern England type film that's set in the late 19th century. A ghost story with very few visuals of ghosts. It's really a bump in the night, creaking doors type film.
That is one good thing about, you know, a film like that that's kind of built on all of these great, like, mm-hmm. Hammer films that were made in the 70s, that, like, a lot of times, you know, when somebody does a film that's heavy on that homage to that style, it can lead you back to those old films. But, you know, if you're talking about kids, somehow still rated G, the original Snow White. Mm-hmm. Is actually quite terrifying when it gets down to business, you know. Disney would not make that movie now.
Right. Somebody wants to cut someone's heart out.
It's considered a
classic.
Bring
it back in
now,
a box.
But, you know, it's like, I actually think that that's a really, you know, that's a really interesting film to show a kid. Very disturbing. And you know, still to this day, The Wizard of Oz still disturbs me. The witch, and I think it's that primary color, that bright green face.
And
she
the monkeys.
Has. And the monkeys
the
will
dark
haunt
forest.
My dreams forever.
Yeah. I mean, it's the stuff of nightmares.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if you want to give your kid like a little dose of horror, but, you know, that also kind of has that sort of family thing. Again, you know, movies that were made in the 30s and 40s that would never be made now as children's films.
Well, great list. We've run out of time, but I wanted to say thanks, Lucky, for coming in and chatting with me about horror films and some of your particular personal favorites.
Thank you.
I've been discussing the popularity of the horror film and some recommended genre titles with writer, director, and author Lucky McKee. McKee has made a number of noteworthy films in the last 15 years, among them May, The Woman, The Woods, and All Cheerleaders Die. McKee's films are available on various streaming platforms, and his new film, Misfortune, starring John Cusack, will be released in 2017. For an extended conversation with Lucky McKee, log on to ktep.org. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.